want to walk through the case of Governor Rick Perry. We know that late Friday afternoon, two felony indictments were handed down. There's been a lot of coverage over the weekend about the content of those indictments, and we're going to get to that during the discussion time. But I want to ask a couple of questions that have come up that I haven't heard a lot about so far. One of those is payment. Who is going to be paying the governor's legal bills for imagining months? Could stretch out into years for this case. Who's going to be paying the legal bills for that?
I think they're going to probably make a determination as to whether they think this is a case against the head of government, in which case the government would pay for it. You know, you'd see Marianne Wiley, his state lawyer, general counsel in front of it, or whether it's a case that's a Perry personal case or some mix of the two. And, you know, if it's the latter, then it's got to come out of his funds or his campaign funds or some other source.
Well, and then that very question kind of seems to hinge on what's in the indictments themselves, which is the governor is saying, I exercise my constitutional right to veto what I think is appropriate to veto. But of course, the opposition is saying it's not the veto, it's the alleged threats, the alleged coercion that were seem to have been coupled with the veto.
It's not, you know, the prosecutors would say and have said, you know, it's not that the governor thought Rosemary Lemberg should not be the district attorney anymore after her drunk driving arrest and conviction. And it's not that the governor vetoed the state's funding of the public integrity unit at the Travis County District Attorney's Office. It's that he tied the two things together, said either do this or else. And the fact of that threat is what they're calling the coercion that triggered the statute. You know, Rosemary Lemberg was looking at this and, you know, pretty quickly decided she shouldn't be in it. So a judge, the partisans are all over this. A judge appointed a special prosecutor to run the grand jury and to do these charges. He did that. He's been through something like 40 witnesses over a long period of time. It's been a remarkably unleaky grand jury process. You know, a lot of times, you know, you get a little blip and a drib and a drab and you watch people go in and out and you can tell a lot about it. This has been pretty locked up. And I think a lot of people, even that were paying attention to it, were surprised that indictments came out.
Well, I was just going to ask another sort of process question about the grand jury. I think everybody was surprised late Friday afternoon when the indictments came out. Can you tell us a little bit, just for a minute or two, about how a grand jury works? Because the question has come up in some of the coverage, you know, indicting a governor when he's a sitting governor. We know that Rick Perry is close to the end of his time as Texas governor. Case of the governor of Virginia, he was indicted after he was out of office. So there's a timing question here, not just the timing of late Friday afternoon, but the bigger picture timing. How does a grand jury work and how what determines when the indictment is released?
You know, grand juries have a term. They meet, you know, for a period of time. They're appointed for a period of time. They meet a couple of days a week over that period of time. And when they're through with cases or as they finish cases, they bill them out. They, you know, issue indictments or no bill, you know, in cases when they don't think that this should go to a jury. And, you know, Friday afternoon's not unusual. Thursday afternoon's not unusual. They tend to do it at the end of a week. And, you know, here they were. Now, the other question is, it's not supposed to matter if whether somebody's in politics or not, whether they're in office or not, if you committed a crime or if the grand jury thinks you committed a crime, they indict you when they indict you. And they're not supposed to, I mean, if they're not taking politics into consideration, they're not supposed to take politics into consideration. You can read that however you want to. But, you know, what they would say is, you know, we issued the indictment when we were done.
So I want to get back just for a second to kind of the delineation of the two, I'm going to call them sort of tracks of communication going on here. The one that...
At least two.
At least, well, that's true. That's true. There are many more than two, but kind of the two main ones going on, the governor and his supporters' contention that he's being unfairly attacked for exercising a veto, and then the opposition, the other side communication that it's not that, but it's the alleged coupling of that with the threat of exercising coercion in the case. It's a bit nuanced. I mean, you kind of have to stop and think about it for a second. And watching coverage over the weekend, it seems like those can get muddled pretty quickly. And I'm sort of wondering, just to hear from you, how you think this is going to sort of play out in the court of public opinion? Because you kind of have to focus a little bit to follow the detail points of the case.
The court of public opinion is going right now in these first 72 hours or so on, you know, Rick Perry was trying to stop a DA who had come off the rails. And, you know, the spin from the Perry folks has all been, you know, how could you do nothing? Look at these videos. We've seen those videos again and again over the weekend. And they've sort of played it like that. They've also played it as this is a, you know, Travis County is that liberal county in Texas, the blueberry in the tomato soup, you know, the little blue county in the middle of red Texas. And, of course, a grand jury there indicted a Republican governor and presidential prospect, they're playing that card. That's the card, you know, you would play. That's, you know, just because it's the textbook thing doesn't mean it's the wrong thing to do. You're going to eventually get to a point where the lawyers come in and they say, you know, is this, was there a violation of law here? And they're going to begin to argue the fine points of that. So Perry's got two things to do here. One of them is going to get his lawyers busy with that thing, you know, try to knock down the indictment. There'll be a whole round of things about that. On the other hand, he wants to run for president. He said he's interested in running for president, and, you know, he doesn't really want the word Perry and the word indictment in the same sentence, whether it's coming out of a Republican or a Democratic mouth. So he would like to get that out of the way.
So there's been another narrative emerging about Governor Perry that had started before the news of last week, before the indictments, and that's related to 2016, that after 2012, an unsuccessful campaign for the GOP presidential nomination had some blunders on the campaign trail, the oops moment in the debate that a lot of people are going to remember, that this time he was sort of getting back on track. The campaign, he hasn't officially declared, but he was traveling, kind of starting to gear up. And there was sort of a shade to it that this one was looking a little stronger. Maybe he was getting back on track. I'm curious to hear from you. Is that a valid narrative? Where was he in that campaign process, you know, Friday at noon before all of this happened?
You know, his proposition on this has been, you know, and he said this a bunch of times, this is a country that believes in second chances. And he's been out testing that proposition against a field of Republicans where there's not really a strong leader. And, you know, you look at it, you know, just as a, you know, here's the array of candidates, and you look at him and you go, you know, maybe not, but there's a chance here. And the first question has turned now, at least for the moment, from, so why are you back? You know, that's the first sort of sell to an activist or to a financier or whomever, to, so tell me about these indictments. And Perry would rather be talking about the first question than the second.
So obviously this will have some impact on his right. campaign, but one of the descriptions I heard over the weekend was, you know, if you follow his communication strategy, his line of argument, it could be a help.
You know, Kay Bailey Hutchison was indicted by Ronnie Earle back in 1993 and came out of that. It went to trial. The first day of trial, it was declared a directed verdict, and she won. And she had vanquished this Democratic political prosecutor, and that became the storyline, and she became a political star for the moment. You know, Perry's, you know, hoping for a similar result.
So I'm curious, Ross, we have seen a lot of coverage over the weekend, heard a lot, and there's obviously a lot more still to come. And this is probably going to stretch out for months, if not years. But I'm just wondering from your vantage point, if there are some points or aspects of this scene that you haven't heard as much about that we should maybe be paying a little more attention to, or some maybe unseen moments that deserve a little more attention.
There's a lot of unpacking to go on here. You know, the prosecutor that was drunk was not the prosecutor who took this to the district attorney. That's one thing. The case hasn't really been laid out. So there's a whole lot of stuff here that the grand jury has seen that we haven't seen. Doesn't mean the grand jury's right. It just means that they've seen a lot of things that we haven't seen. They talked to something like 40 witnesses. They heard all of this evidence. They looked at all of this stuff. Something in there didn't smell right to them. And, you know, we don't really have a clear, all of us on the outside don't really have a clear idea of what that was. The indictment itself was just a couple of pages, not very descriptive. I think we'll see all of that come out. And we'll also see, you know, as the political thing unfolds, you know, right now it's sort of playing as a Republicans versus Democrats story. Perry's in a Republican presidential primary. It's going to be a Republicans versus Republicans story pretty quickly. And I think the political thing is going to change tack too.
And final question, Ross, we're running out of time. It's gone by so quickly, but any sense of how this might impact Texas politics in the fall of 2014? Obviously, Rick Perry not running for re-election, but Greg Abbott is facing Wendy Davis. Is this going to have any impact on that?
You know, it takes a little bit of the oxygen out of the room. It takes, you know, attention away and puts it on something else. That's not great for the challenger. The Democrats, Joe Deschatel, a state House member from Beaumont, has asked Greg Abbott to weigh in on your first question. Should the state taxpayers pay this? Greg Abbott's the attorney general and the Republican nominee for governor. That puts Abbott into this thing. I'm not sure he wants to be in it.
Ross Ramsey is executive editor of KUT's political reporting partner, the Texas Tribune. Ross, we thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.